Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ podcast. Josh and I hope that you're enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have two tiers of support, $3 per month and $7 per month. So again, our Patreon page is patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show. Hello and welcome to the Tennis IQ podcast. I'm Brian Lomax.
And I'm Josh Berger. And for today's episode, we're going to discuss a listener question. So we had a listener who reached out and asked if we could address the topic of tryouts. And as I'm sure many of our listeners know, who are, you know, either high school players or parents of high school players, we're right around the time where high school tryouts tend to take place. And I think this topic of tryouts is relevant, whether it's a high school player, whether it's a college player, whether there's other sorts of situations. But I think it also relates to higher pressure moments in general. Whether these are challenge matches within a team, maybe it's for high school or college, whether it's, districts, regionals, sectionals, nationals for USTA teams. And I think just in general, we can really compare some of these experiences that players are going through during tryouts to other high pressure moments, whether it's tournaments, whether it's leagues, whether it's team matches, whatever it is. But I think every player can really relate to these moments where they're playing and it feels maybe a little bit more important than a normal match. And there's some immediate consequences, just like a player who's trying out feels like, okay, I need to win, or I'm supposed to win, or in order for me to play for this team, I have to win. And there's some immediate consequences. I think there's other situations where players can feel the immediacy and the consequences and the pressure of the moment. And I think that's really what we want to get into with today's episode.
I think there is a lot of pressure, and I'm sure you have felt it, Josh, whether it's with tennis or other sports. I can remember my first tryout when I was 8 years old for Little League Baseball. And, there's tons of kids around and they're doing certain skills, and it's you're looking around and you are comparing yourself to other people. You know, that's certainly one of the challenges. And you want to impress coaches, and depending on the nature of the tryout, with the tennis team, it's usually a process with, maybe like what I just described, that was like a 2 hour thing. And then you were drafted by a team, about that for 8 year old getting drafted, right? But yeah, you feel that pressure. You want to impress people. From a tennis perspective, you feel the pressure to win, or you're comparing yourself to your teammates. There's depending on where you are ability wise, maybe it's about playing in a certain spot in the lineup and really wanting that. Or you might even just be on the cusp of just making the team. Will you make varsity? Will you not make varsity? Will you be cut, or will you be sent to JV? There are a lot of things that can be on your mind, that can be worrying, that can bring out some anxiety with the process, which then corrupts your ability to perform and to perform well on the things that you can control. So it is it's a difficult environment. I think, we want to touch a little bit on this today, but hopefully our coaches have some empathy around the difficulty of what they're, what the players are going through, and that they can make this process not easy per se, but, psychologically easier, better, so that players don't feel as much pressure and that they're able to really kind of express themselves through their games more freely and feel like they have that opportunity to do that. So we can, discuss a little bit for coaches some advice on that side of things. But I think it's a great topic, probably more relevant perhaps to some of our high school in North America, School sports situations are different in other parts of the world, but there might be club teams that people are trying out for. So I think these situations where we're being evaluated by others and maybe competing for a spot on a team can happen in multiple contexts.
Totally, totally. And I think that feeling of being evaluated and being judged, that, somebody watching you, and somebody, not just anybody watching you, but a coach who's ultimately making the decision about whether or not you make the team, about maybe where you play in the lineup, what spot you play. Sometimes it's a situation of JV versus varsity. But that can really feel like a lot of pressure. And I think it has a tendency to make people at times play not to lose rather than playing to win, rather than trying to play their game and really showcase their skills. I have seen in my experience that oftentimes people will play not to lose. They'll try to stop going for their shots and just avoid missing, or maybe they'll wait for their opponent to go for it and take the chance, and they'll sort of lay back. And I've experienced this myself within my game. Some of these higher pressure moments, I feel like I've reverted back to sort of a playing style of, not taking chances, not taking risks, that sort of thing. But I think in general, yeah, it's definitely a challenge, when you can see what the consequences of a win or a loss is, to play loose, to play free. We just did an episode on relaxation, right? And we talked about how tennis players and athletes of all kinds can feel themselves tensing up, especially in big moments, and what they can do about that. And I think if people are looking for some specific techniques there, you can certainly check out that recent episode. Things like breathing, things like progressive muscle relaxation, things like specific sorts of self-talk, where we're trying to send a signal to our bodies to relax, to, maybe get out of that fight or flight state, and to feel like we're able to take chances, we're able to go for it, knowing that we could miss, knowing that we could lose, but recognizing that that's the playing style that we ultimately need to play better and to play our game. So I think it definitely is a challenge for players to get into this mode where they feel comfortable taking chances, they feel comfortable going for their shots or playing their games, at least for a lot of people. And I think, I think one thing that can help with that is to understand that tryouts might feel like the only thing that matters or the most important thing. But can we get to a point where we're able to broaden our perspective a little bit and understand that this is not the end of the world, right? This is not the end of the world ultimately. Yes, we want to make this team. Yes, we want to have that spot on the team, but ultimately it's another milestone. It's another learning experience. And, there are so many examples of people such as Michael Jordan, plenty of other examples of people who haven't made their high school teams or have been cut from certain teams in the past. So, can we keep things in perspective and understand that this is not the end of the world, but that we want to really learn from this experience and sort of view it through this lens of everything is practice. This is ultimately practice for next year or the next time I go through this experience. And yes, it'd be great to make the team, or yes, it'd be great to make varsity or get a higher spot in the lineup, but we can't, but if we have the mentality of that everything rides on this, it all comes down to this, then generally we end up putting a lot of pressure on ourselves and actually underperforming. So instead, trying to keep it in perspective, understand that this is another milestone along our journey as a tennis player, and to try to do our best to try to have fun, enjoy the experience. You want to be able to look back at it with positive memories. And, with all that, can we get to a point where hopefully we're able to play loose and relax enough to really play our game and not be so worried about the consequences of each shot or each match that we play?
Yeah. And because it's a tryout, we know we're being evaluated. So let's talk about ways to approach that. Whether we call it trying to impress our coach or whatever, we are being evaluated, and at the end of, whatever the tryout time period is, that there will be some sort of judgment about the spot you play in, or whether you're on the varsity team or on the junior varsity team, or not on the team at all. And so how do we, what's the best way to approach that, right? We want to be evaluated in a positive way, and yet that is, what someone else is thinking and what their evaluation will look like is out of our control. We have some influence on it, and so we have to recognize what influence do we have on a coach's impression of us. Not, we don't fully control that, obviously. So I think when we think about some of the controllable items that are really important going into this, we can start off with simply effort and attitude. Going in there, trying to be the hardest working player we can be at practice. Having a great positive attitude, paying attention to what the coach is saying. Because think about it, when you get in a group and sometimes it gets a little too social and we're talking to somebody, we're not listening to the coach. The coach probably notices that. They probably notice who is, making eye contact and who is not and who is talking and so forth. You can always talk to your friends after practice, but this is a good time to be right here, right now. And let's focus on what we're doing. Let's focus on what the coach is asking us to do. Because if it's a well-run tryout, hopefully there are several days of, doing drills, perhaps some practice games and competitions before there are more formal challenge matches or matches that are going to be tallied up to see where people fall. So I think that's one approach, is develop the right effort level and attitude, very controllable items. And anytime I think of a tryout, Josh, I'm always reminded of the story of Herm Edwards, who was an NFL defensive back with the Philadelphia Eagles. He was also a head coach. He's worked on ESPN as an analyst. And I read this many years ago in Jay Billis's book. Jay Billis was a college basketball player at Duke, also an ESPN college basketball analyst now. So he has a great book called Toughness. Doesn't matter what sport you play, it's a wonderful book to read. But he talks about Herm Edwards, who was a very good college football player coming out of Syracuse, but was not drafted. And, first of all, that was a hit to his identity as a college football player. He thought he was a good player, not drafted. So then he goes, he signs as a free agent with the Philadelphia Eagles, and he's showing up at training camp competing against something like 25 guys for one spot on the team. And he's not even the guy that they wanted, right? He signed as a free agent. They presumably have people that they already want. So he already knows he's going to get less of a look than other people. So he made it not about other guys. He just competed with himself every day and thought about, how can I get better every day? How can I give a little bit more effort, better attitude each day, every day? And he had this perspective of, I want to get something from practice, from every workout, every day, as opposed to, I just want to get through practice. And that was something that he noticed was a difference in attitude between him and some of these other guys that he was competing with, was many of them just wanted to get through the practice. He wanted to get something from the practice. And that turned into an all-pro career for him. Made the team, started on opening day. And it's all because of his approach to this whole tryout environment where he's competing for a spot. But he didn't necessarily do it as a comparison thing. He did it more about, this is about me. This is about what I'm going to get out of this. I'm going to grow as much as I can. And truly, especially in a sport like tennis, Josh, I think the one you have to compete with the most is yourself. You can't compare yourself to others because they're not you. They've lived a different path, made different choices. They're at a different point in their journey. And so it's not necessarily a valid comparison, but if you can compete with yourself every day and try to be better the next day, be prepared for practice every day, then I think you have an opportunity to make the most of this practice. And you also give yourself a better chance of making the team. you give yourself a better chance of impressing the coach. There are no guarantees there. But don't we want to give ourselves a better chance? And we do that through really focusing on these controllables and our perspective on practice and really trying to get the most out of these sessions that we can. And don't make it all about making the team. Make it all about you becoming better.
Totally, totally. And I think that there's a lot of small details that coaches will notice about people, right? They'll notice who is talking to their friends and fooling around. They'll notice who, you know, is more present, who really is trying to move their feet. You know, I remember a situation where, it often does, fortunately or unfortunately, come down to two people. Maybe it's for that last spot. And I can think back to a situation where one of those people, I think, really went out of their way to make sure that they were more of a team player, bringing water for other people, that sort of thing. And I think it made the difference. You know, it's coaches, it's not just coaches are necessarily looking for, yes, they're looking for the best players, but they're also, you know, they're trying to find a good fit for their team. And I can think back to this, you know, in terms of when I was coaching at the college level and thinking about the recruiting process, right? It's not just a matter of trying to find the best player for your team. It's also about finding people that will be a good fit, people that will get along well with the coaching staff, with the people on the team, people that the coaches don't feel like they have to babysit or, you know, micromanage, but that they can trust to make the right decisions and, you know, that they'll enjoy having on the team, and people that they feel like will go the extra mile, will try their hardest, will be, you know, supportive of other team members. You know, I think, and this isn't exactly with tryouts, but this is something that I think is true of, you know, tennis teams in general, right? Because tennis is an individual sport, right? Maybe not doubles. Sure, doubles is a team sport, but, you know, it, in terms of high school, college, even USTA teams, it really is an individual sport within a team setting. So I think one thing that I always looked for as a coach, and just, you know, even on teams that I've been a part of, is when somebody would lose their match, how would they react, right? With, you know, sometimes you see people, they'll lose a match and then they're not talking to any of their teammates. They're kind of sitting by themselves. And other times you see somebody, they lose their match, or they lose their singles, doubles match, whatever it is, but they're able to move on past it. They're able to be there with their teammates and support other teammates who are playing in matches. So, you know, I think there's different ways during that tryout process to show some of these character skills, like teamwork, not just caring about yourself and your own results, your own performance, but being able to put the team first. And even before you make a team during that tryout process, I think there are opportunities to show off some of those traits.
For sure. Tennis, when it's in a team environment, we would refer to that generally as a coactive, because we're accumulating each other's scores, as opposed to an interactive sport. Team sport like soccer or hockey, where, you know, you're really playing for one score. And even that sense of cohesion and togetherness makes a difference with coactive teams.
Yep.
And that is something I think during a tryout period to show. Can you be a great teammate? I like that story you just said, Josh, about the player who brought water to others. That makes a difference. You can't guarantee that your coach will see that. And of course you want to do that in a genuine way.
Totally.
But the more that you're that way, certainly the more that will be noticed, and that it's certainly something that's going to benefit you. I think that's a very, very good point, to try to bring some of your own character strengths to the team more so. With high school tryouts versus college tryouts, a little bit different, right? Because, I mean, if it's a public high school, you can't recruit. So you, as a coach, you may get who you get, you know, and it's, that could be a more of a mixed bag of personalities. But that's, you know, that's the job, and that's what you've signed up for. Where you're right, I think in college, It shouldn't just be about recruiting talent and not caring about the character of the players. The character is important because even coactive teams, they need a certain amount of chemistry and cohesion to succeed. In fact, some research studies have shown that those types of factors, chemistry, cohesion, togetherness, actually have more of an impact on a coactive team than an interactive team in terms of benefits to performance. I mean, it's important in both contexts, but it's kind of cool that the more kind of a team feeling that a tennis team has, the more they can achieve. You wouldn't necessarily think that, right? So I think those are very excellent suggestions, Josh, in terms of how we want players to respond to the pressure environment there. I think there are a couple more things that I would just like to add in terms of what to do in the tryout timeframe. I think for yourself, we talked about this topic in our episode on mental contrasting, which is understand what their, your own personal obstacles may be toward making the team. And then come up with a plan for that. Because one of the frameworks we talked about was called WOOP, which stands for wish, outcome, obstacles, plan. The wish is obviously to make the team. The outcome, think that even though it sounds like the same as the wish, but outcome, really think of that more as the benefits, right? What are the benefits? Making the team. All right. Part of a group. I love being on this team. I can, compete more for my school. My tennis game will get further along, et cetera. So we want to keep both of those in mind. Make the team, and what are the benefits of making the team for me? But then what are the obstacles to that? And that may be unique to you. It might be some of just the pressure that you feel. It may be the fact that this is a very good team, or there's some very good players here. Understand what those obstacles are, and then come up with a plan for each one of those. Most of us, we probably think mostly about the wish and the outcome, the benefits. And we don't necessarily think about what could go wrong. What do we need to plan for? So I think that's one thing, Josh, is to come up with some of those items. So let's take an example. Let's say you're prone to be a little bit stressed in practice, and that may lead to overthinking and comparing yourself. So in that situation, perhaps we create a very short self-talk script that you could repeat to yourself over and over throughout practice. And you might have a little bit different script for your competitive matches. And it could be simple, like, breathe, stay loose, have fun. There could be other ones. And then just simply repeat that so that you're not overthinking the situation, but you're also keeping it focused on things you can control. You could add in watch the ball, move your feet. A lot of easy things to put in that basic script. I think we've talked about this before, in past episodes, as a way of controlling what we're thinking about and helping with overthinking. But when we are stressed, we tend to think too much. And we get stuck on the problems, and we start creating stories around those problems, and then it sort of balloons out into something that's maybe more catastrophic in our mind. So I think those are examples of some things that we can do during the process of trying out for the team to try to manage that. That goes along with what you said in terms of trying to be a great teammate and bring your character strengths, to the forefront.
Totally, totally. And I think when it comes to the self-talk, just like what you were talking about, I think there's ways that people can actually bring, that physical, tangible reminder. You could write that down on a notebook, or write it down on an index card, a note card, and bring that with you to the court, right? And it doesn't have to be groundbreaking things. It could be, really focusing on those fundamentals, but really trying to do it well. Watching the ball, right? I mean, when you say it, sometimes people have a sort of an adverse reaction to it. Like, oh, of course I'm watching the ball. How could I be hitting? How could I be playing the sport or hitting the ball if I'm not watching it? But oftentimes that is the case, that people aren't really making an intention, and really making sure that they are watching the ball. And when you do try to pay more attention to the ball. And there's drills you can do, such as bounce hit. And we talked about this during our episode with Sean Brawley. But when you really try to watch the ball and try to watch it all the way to your strings, it's amazing the impact that it has. Or something like moving your feet. Again, feels very basic, something very simple. When you really try to focus on that, it's amazing the impact that it has. So can we focus on some of these key things? But I also find, and I think you have had similar experiences, Brian, there's one thing having a conversation with somebody about it, right? And having like a session where we talk about some of these ideas, or even, a player having certain intentions going into a match or going into a practice for how they want to play. But once the pressure's on, once you're in the heat of the moment, it can be very easy to forget some of these things. So being able to write some of these things down and bring it with you. And, if you write that on an index card, note card, having that be part of your routine to actually take it out of your bag, right? So maybe you get to the court, you take your racket out, your water out, and you take that note card out. And then that note card has those reminders. And maybe you have certain times where you like to look at it, right before the match, after the warm-up, during certain changeovers, or maybe you have it sort of as needed. And it's there and it's what ready for you, waiting for you, when you want to look at it. But I think having those reminders for how you want to talk to yourself, for certain things that you want to keep in mind, can really go a long way. Because I think, a big thing that we want to do during tryouts is try to, during tryouts, during these high pressure moments, is look to take pressure off, right? There's already pressure. There's already external pressure on us. Can we try to make sure that we're not adding unnecessary pressure to ourselves? Of course, you want to win matches. Of course, you want to make the team. Of course, you want to play well, and that's a given. So can we not just be focused on the result, but instead be focused on how we get there, focused on that process through focusing on some of these controllable factors and, really try to control the controllables, like our footwork, watching the ball, our attitude, our effort levels, how we react or respond after matches as well. And again, that could certainly be coaches, something that coaches notice. And yeah, trying to make sure that, we're again in an honest, way, in a real way, but trying to display our character traits and be the type of person that is able to put the team first, be the type of person that is able to really give their full effort, and that will be noticed, or that at least should be noticed. Again, when we talk about what is and is not within our control, the outcome is not fully within our control. We might play great and the coach might say that, hey, we didn't make the team, and that's ultimately their decision. But can we do everything that we can to control the controllables and, give ourselves the best possible chance by focusing on our process and trying to really set ourselves up for success, while recognizing that ultimately the, there are certain things like this decision that are out of our control.
Yeah. I think I might put a little different spin on control the controllables, because I think now people hear that so much
Yep.
and it's becoming maybe not as impactful. But I think the more that you perform at a high, excellent level on those things within your control, what is the result of that? The result is that you give yourself a better chance of achieving those things that you want to achieve. And that's all we're suggesting to anybody who's listening here is, if you want to give yourself the best chance of making your team, identify a few items that are within your control, that if you know you execute them at a high level consistently, will give you the best chance of making the team. So in that, those things may be different for everybody. Certainly effort and attitude can be common, but making sure you are enjoying, embracing the challenge as an attitude. Your footwork, watching the ball, breathing, working on your relaxation state. All of these things, and I think it's different for everybody, is can you choose three, four, five items that are totally within your control, that if you do them well, you give yourself a good chance to play well, you give yourself then a good chance to win, give yourself a good chance to impress. And to me, that's really the formula here, is knowing what you can control and trying to be excellent at all that stuff. And just have sort of the leap of faith that that's what's going to give you a chance to make this team. And then even if you don't make the team or you don't end up where you wanted to, at least it is something where you gave it your best. You don't feel like there's some regret. Well, I could have paid more attention, or I don't know what happened. I didn't focus when I was playing this person. And this is a hard process because we know that there's a little extra pressure here. Because, yeah, you're playing either for a spot on the team or a spot in the lineup, or it's just a little bit more. With that level of evaluation, you got to win, plus you got to impress. And the more we get fixated on that, the more difficult it becomes. So I think that's kind of how I would, like to maybe just change a little bit of the conversation on the controllable piece, is really look at it as a performance area. Because, yeah, we all want to win, we all want to play well, but that stuff isn't fully within our control. So how do we get there? How do we give ourselves a better chance? And that's really where the controllables are key.
Totally, totally. And I think that's a really good point. You know, can we recognize that our performance isn't fully within our control? Also, I think, and this is a point I try to make to people I work with, everybody, including the best players in the world, has better and worse days, right? They're, you
Definitely.
know, our performance level, and so does everybody's, varies, right? There's going to be days where you feel like, you know, you're playing great, and maybe things are coming really easily and naturally that day. And other days where it feels like you're trying to swim upstream, right? And it's, you know, you feel that resistance, and it feels like, you know, maybe you woke up on the wrong side of the bed, maybe you didn't get a good night's sleep, maybe you have other things on your mind, whatever it is, but it feels a lot harder to perform at your best, or to perform well on that particular day. So can we get to a point where we're able to recognize that, but say, hey, you know, I am still going to, despite things maybe not going my way, despite the ball hitting the net court and going, you know, dropping over on my side of the net rather than my opponent's, you know, I am still going to focus on these things that I've determined ahead of time are within my control. Things like my effort and attitude, as you mentioned, Brian. Things like my decision making. Things like my, you know, how I talk to myself. Things like my routines in between points. If I've committed to, you know, those main things for me, and it ultimately doesn't go my way, I can leave with my head held high that I did everything within my control, and I at least gave myself a fighting chance. If I didn't, and I woke up on the wrong side of the bed, and you know, and I only ha I so there's a the way that I will often think about this in terms of that sort of difference in level on a particular day, and maybe I've brought this up in a past episode, is actually from Ken Revizza, who you know, did a lot of work in sports psychology. He passed away, unfortunately, a few years ago, but he I remember him talking about, you know, having a good, he referred to it as a good crappy day, where, like, you know, if you have 60% of your best on a particular day, well, then you better make sure that you're giving 100% of that 60%. You know, if you're not, and you're only giving 50% of that, then we're at, you know, 50% of that 60%, then we're at 30%, right? So you're competing with someone who's, you know, probably closer to 100. So if you don't have, you know, your best on a particular day, you better make sure that your effort level is there, that your focus is there, that your attitude is there, that you're willing to, you know, really try to grind and really try to make it happen, right? Rather than expecting that things will be easy and being willing to give up when they're not, can we really dig in on those moments where we don't have our best stuff, recognizing that that will happen some days, but be able to rely on some of our tools that hopefully we've built up to that point in terms of how we talk to ourselves, in terms of our routines, how we spend time, you know, our fight, right? And these things, you know, maybe for some people, some of them come a little bit more naturally than others, some of these tools, but these are things that you build over time. These are things that you build on the practice court. These are things that you build through matches. These are things that you can build off the court as well through mental training. But By having those tools, whether it's a tryout situation or a practice situation or a match, you're able to rely on those both when you're playing really well, when you're playing okay, and when you're not playing well, to hopefully, give you a better chance to still perform at a solid level on that particular day.
Right. And hopefully, from a coaching perspective, the process of running the tryout, the first couple of weeks of practice, is one in which players are allowed to settle in, get comfortable. The first day of practice might be rough for several players. And I think as coaches, we have to understand that, empathize with that. There's a lot on the line for these kids. Ideally, teams would have a no-cut policy so that they can remain part of the group and they can remain in the sport. And I think there's so many more benefits to having a big roster than there are to cutting kids and maintaining a small roster, and then the impacts of that. So what I mean by the whole, the good comfortable process is, the first few days, let's just let everybody get comfortable with the environment and playing and practicing, knowing that day two and three and four will probably be better and better for kids as they become more comfortable with, coming to the courts, coming at this particular time, playing with these certain players, having the coach or coaches walk around. Because by the time we start having them play more competitive things, we want them to feel more at ease. I would also say, in terms of the coaches in this process, is be upfront about what you're looking for from players. Some of that criteria may be somewhat subjective, like we were saying earlier, Josh, with respect to good teammate behaviors. But other things should be explained in terms of, what's the format of the maybe the challenge matches that we're playing. What's the process of, is it a tournament? How does it work? How do we get through the next week or so of matches? How is the lineup determined? What are the possibilities of, once the season begins, playing between spots in case you want to challenge, or even as a coach, you want to move people around, that kind of thing. And I've worked with some players who've been at some schools where these things haven't been in place. And I'm thinking of one particular player where the tryout situation was a very short match to about three or four games. And all those matches that were played in the preseason, that made the lineup, and the lineup was frozen. And so the person I was working with was really clearly the best player on the team, but she got very nervous about this whole process and she ended up choking. And so she got stuck playing number two the entire year when she was clearly the best player on the team. Just wasn't allowed to kind of work her way into a match that way. And I think in some ways that's more of an indictment of the system of the tryout than it was of this player's ability to play. So I think we just want to realize that and set up a comfortable playing environment so that people have the ability to play their way into a match, to play their best, to have it really be a true test of, who the better player is. Four or five games isn't necessarily a great showcase for who the best player is. And if you do have to cut kids, I think it's, again, we want to be empathetic about that. Again, hopefully we don't have to do it. We can have them on a junior varsity team, and maybe that's a big team and so forth, but we have to be mindful of players who get cut can often disengage from the sport. Their identity as tennis players can be corrupted to a certain degree. And we don't want to lose a player from the sport just because they couldn't make a particular team. So everything we can do to keep them involved, I think, is best. Hence the no cut policy probably being the best approach, because it might be that particular person who really needs the team the most. If you think about it, like a lot of the players we work, Josh, they might play high school tennis and they might be really, really good. Do they really need the team? Probably not. They could get along and just play their USTA or other junior tournaments that are around, and the world will continue. But it might be that player who's right on the edge, whose social life or school life, tennis life, could really benefit from being a part of the team. And as coaches, we have the power to really help in that situation. And if we are going to cut, then we have to, I think, be mindful of that kind of thing. And maybe there are opportunities to have somebody be a team manager or somehow stay involved with the team in some capacity so that they can feel, so they can develop a social identity around the sport, around their school, and feel included. So I just wanted to throw out just a few things on the coaching side, Josh, to try to help kids through this difficult process.
Totally, totally. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because I think, and I think we understand that there are certain factors that may be that can impact things, such as, budget, or even like, school, the number of uniforms or space on the bus or vans or, things like that. So, even court space. But I totally agree that, having a more of a no cut policy does give more people the opportunity to play. And yeah, it's, it really is true that when somebody is cut from a team, there's a feeling of discouragement and a lot more likely to drop out or to stop playing the sport. So if there's ways to avoid that, and you can keep people on the team, whether it's, as you said, as a team manager or, a JV team or whatever it is, but, whether maybe it's a practice squad, whatever it is, but keeping people, giving people play opportunities, even if they're not in the starting lineup, even if they're not the best players, I think is definitely beneficial. One thing that I would also point to, changing gears a little bit here, talking more about the performance side, is can we, when we're in some of these matches, and I think this is true whether it's a tryout situation or other high pressure moments, whether that's maybe the finals of a tournament or a break point even. Right, tiebreaker, whatever it is, can we take ourselves out of our own perspective and recognize what our opponent might be going through? Recognize that we're not the only ones feeling that pressure, feeling that stress. We're not the only ones whose thoughts might be racing, right? The person on the other side of the net or that team on the other side of the net is likely going through the same thing. So can we, going back to, trying to find ways to take pressure off ourselves, can we broaden our perspective and, have more of a perspective that this is not just a high pressure moment for me, this is a high pressure moment, period, right? And can I recognize that my opponent's probably going through the same thing, that my coach hopefully recognizes that it's high pressure and is understanding of that, and maybe they've designed that on purpose to see which players handle the pressure best. But, my coach is probably going to want to see me continue to go for my shots, even though I've missed some of them, rather than completely change my game in order to win now and maybe sacrifice, the future. So, just wanted to add that in. But no, I think, when it comes to these teams, whether it's a USTA league team, whether it's a high school team, whether it's a college team, whether it's a club team at college, whatever it is, we want to recognize that there's a lot of benefits to being on the team, right? It's not just this training environment where we're trying to get better and better and beat our rivals. Yes, of course, that's a piece of it. We're trying to work on our game. There's the competitive aspect, but there really is, it is also a social environment. It, so many people have some of their closest friends from their teams, whatever level and age that is. So I think, being able to recognize that and put policies in place where we can make that, happen more and provide more opportunities for people is definitely beneficial.
Sure. Yeah. earlier you were mentioning about that other players in history, many great athletes have been cut. Michael Jordan, you brought up, was cut as a, I believe, a sophomore from his high school basketball team. A famous baseball pitcher, Oral Hershiser, pitched for the Dodgers for a long time. He was cut from his high school baseball team. And that, getting cut could be a reality. So you mentioned a little bit of this earlier, Josh, but I'd like to go deeper in this now. What are some messages that, if this was someone that you were working with, was cut, how would you work with them on a positive response to this, knowing that a lot of the research studies show players disengage, their athletic identity is corrupted, etc.?
It's a great question. I think trying to really drill down and really be clear about why we play in the first place, right? And generally that's about something more than right now. It's about being the best player that we can be. Maybe it's about making it to that next level. Maybe it's about proving something to yourself or to the people around you. Whatever it is, but I think really being clear about why we play, why this is important to us, why we enjoy it, and hopefully we've done that work ahead of time. So I think, having those answers be very clear makes that turbulence, makes that these challenging times more manageable, because we understand that things happen in life. We understand that there's ups and downs. We understand that things don't always go our way, but we have those clear reasons for why we do what we do, and we don't let those things stop us from continuing to play, and it feeling like the end of the world. I mean, I brought up, being able to keep things in perspective earlier, and we've talked a lot on this show in past episodes about, this everything is practice mentality, and about being able to keep things in perspective and understand that, each performance is one more data point, is one more quiz or test in terms of what we're capable of, but it's not the end all be all. And I think if we can hopefully get ahead of it, that can make a big difference. But yeah, I think in the moment, acknowledging some of that disappointment and frustration, but then really focusing on, what comes next, what's important now, right? Just like in a match, after you lose a set, or after you get broken, or even lose a big point, you miss an easy overhead, whatever it is, you need to be able to put that behind you, saying, okay, now this, what's important now is being able to put this disappointment behind you. And maybe there's a period of time where you're able to, recognize that disappointment, be disappointed. I'm not saying that we just want to ignore that or push that away, but after a period of time, be able to move on. Focus on what comes next. For that person who's cut from the team, maybe what comes next is they continue to train and they sign up for some tournaments, right? I know with high school in particular, a lot of players either don't play tournaments during the high school season, or they're restricted in terms of how many tournaments they can play or they choose to play. So maybe they sign up for some tournaments during that time, or maybe they're, more of their attention goes towards another sport that they're playing as well. We've talked about the benefits of cross training and playing multiple sports. I think there's a lot that can be done, but I think it's, after a period of time, it's all about, okay, what's important now? How can we bounce back? And I think the more that we have that solid foundation of mental skills, the easier it is. I think sometimes there's this understanding that misunderstanding, I would say, that somebody starts talking to a sports psychology professional when there's an issue, right? And I certainly see that a lot. People will reach out to me when something has gone wrong. Not all the time, but it's certainly common. But instead, I think, if we can change the way that mental training and sports psychology is thought about, and rather than, okay, this is a fix to an issue that I'm having, instead, I really want to build that solid foundation of mental skills, of tools that I can use. And then when I'm in a challenging environment, when I've hit, when something has happened, whether it's an injury, whether I'm cut from a team, whether it's a bad loss, whatever it is, then I have those tools that I can rely on. And does it, it might still be frustrating, it might still be annoying, you might not handle it perfectly, but you're going to have a better chance of how you handle it and of coming back stronger after that experience.
For sure. And I love everything that you said there. And just to reiterate some of that, perhaps we could use an athlete like Michael Jordan as an inspiration, as someone who didn't stop, who connected, the sport of basketball was bigger for him than just making the high school basketball team. And I think he's even talked about how that even spurred him to work harder on that. And that's something when we think about emotions like disappointment, we can have that channel in kind of one of two directions. We can use it to look at ourselves and how we were and be disappointed, or we can channel that forward into what we want to do and who we want to become. And that's what Michael Jordan did. He took that disappointment from not making his high school basketball team, and he channeled it into action. He was resilient, he was persistent, and he moved forward. And I think that's really the case of almost all emotions that we might call negative in a way, or disappointing kind of emotions, even anger. Can we channel that forward into action so that we can, continue to play? As you said, connect with why you play, connect with why you love the game. This is just a moment in time, and it is just a you are at a certain point in your journey, and maybe at this point you weren't ready to make the team. But that doesn't mean you won't be next year. And there are always more opportunities in tennis if you want them. And it's just a matter of seeking them out. No matter where you are, what age you are, you can always find opportunities to play. It just is a matter of you connecting with why you play and why you love this sport, and channeling any sort of, quote unquote, negative emotion into something positive to do. So I think understanding that this is what could happen when you get cut, the more that we understand that that could happen, the better. Like you said, Josh, the more we're on top of this in terms of mental skills and awareness and understanding that this is a real possibility, the better prepared we can be for it. And we can be hopefully process it a little bit better and then be ready for the next opportunity, whatever that may be. But this can be something that doesn't have to be, shall we say, sort of a condemnation or a confirmation that you're no good. Let's turn this into simply another step to becoming that great player that you know you can become.
Totally, totally. Can we view situations like this as a challenge, right? This is a challenge to make this team. This is a challenge to get a certain spot on this team. This is a challenge to beat a certain player. This is a challenge to handle the pressure that comes along with the tryout situation, right? So can we view those as a challenge rather than a threat? A threat is okay, hopefully I don't get cut from the team. Hopefully I don't lose today. Hopefully this isn't taken away from me. But instead, can we really lean in to the situation, really try to, be eager for the moment, be excited to play these matches rather than worrying so much about what might happen or what could go wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. Any last thoughts for, our players in tryouts, our coaches who are conducting tryouts?
I think for players, try to go out there, have fun. Try to recognize that, the way that you talk to yourself and the pressure that you put on yourself has a big impact. So be very intentional with how you talk to yourself, intentional about how you use some of these tools. Try to take pressure off however you can. And try to enjoy the experience, right? You want to be able to look back at it and feel like you did your best, feel like you enjoyed it, rather than feel like, okay, I was so nervous that I wasn't able to play well, and I hated that because that was really stressful. And I think for coaches, understand that not everybody plays their best in those tryout situations. And that's because of that pressure. And playing under pressure is definitely a skill that some days players do better with than others. We already talked about the no cut piece to things. And then to, also to look to, yes, there's a benefit towards seeing how people perform under pressure, but also, be very clear about why that pressure is there. Be very clear about what your process is, trying to set things up in a way where, there's not that miscommunication, where players understand, how decisions are made in terms of who makes teams or who doesn't, in terms of lineups, in terms of these sorts of things. Is it just based on performance? Is it based on different factors? The more clear, the better communication that takes place, I think the easier it is for players to handle those decisions that are made.
Yes. And so for those players who are, going through high school tryouts in the next couple of weeks, I know other parts of the US, they're already in high school tennis, where we might be a little bit biased towards the northern parts of the country, which are getting into better weather, better spring weather soon. But yeah, it's an important time, and hopefully today's episode was helpful in terms of how to navigate these next couple of weeks for you as you're trying out for your high school team. So thanks, Josh. That was good. And thanks for the suggestion of this very timely topic. So, and thank you all for listening. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions or even topic suggestions, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. You can also use the Twitter hashtag tennisiq. Additionally, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube, so you can be notified of new episodes. And you can also check us out on Instagram. If you would like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiq/membership. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.